Wisconsin.
Good morning. It's the first Friday of the month, and that means it's time for the plant rant. And here is Sandra, the plant lady. Good morning, Sandra.
Good morning, Bob.
Well,
how's it growing?
Here we are by phone again. You've been so long since you've been up here, I forgot what you look like.
I know. I'll send you a picture. You can put it on your desk, and then, you know, you can send me one, and we can pretend we're seeing each other. Well, I'm just glad that technology allows us to to do it this way. So it's not as fun, though, as being there, and it's not as fun. I was really getting into enjoying having guests on, and I think our listeners were enjoying
I think so, too.
That as well. But
you can't, so we do what we can.
And this, too, shall pass.
Eventually.
Hopefully.
It will. Hopefully, exactly.
So let's not go down that path, though. Let's take a break from that
now. It's a break. It's gone.
So how's it growing at your house? You're still digging your baskets and...
Yeah, we're taking good care of all that stuff and mowed the lawn, and we finally got to mow the area that we hadn't been mowing because we had work done and planted new grass and so forth. So we let it get pretty tall. But we've been mowing it now, and it's looking good, so...
Good.
Mission accomplished.
You know, grass has really been kind of intriguing to me lately because...
Really?
Grass is one of the worst things in the garden. I mean, in a perennial bed...
Yep.
There's some folks I've been helping out with some weeding... And there's this little annual grass in there that's just ridiculous. I'll pretty much probably eventually just need to dig everything, dig stuff out and replant it. And the thing is, they don't use mulch, and that's a huge, you know, that just makes such a big difference is using the mulch.
Sure.
And then, but at home here, as hard as it is to get rid of. It's super easy to kill, too, I'm discovering. Like, you know, we have the tent set up for a few weeks. Well, it took a while for that patch to come back.
Sure.
Some things have gotten left in the yard, or you move the grill around, and the ash falls down. And, boy, heat takes care of it. We had a fire during the winter. Our regular fire pit spot's kind of in a low area, so in the winter it doesn't work out very well. And where we had that fire during the winter, that patch of grass has not come back at all. So as hard as it is to get rid of, there's times I'm discovering it's easy to kill as well. Or you wind up like where the tent was now. It's coming back, but it's pretty sparse. It's but that's probably how the mulch is functioning because it's really shading it out and keeping it out of there.
Well, at our place, there were patches, little patches, you know, like 6-8 inches around or across, I should say, that just didn't grow. And so I threw some other grass in there, and it's still not coming. So I don't know what the deal is there, but it's a small patch.
Yeah, you might have something going on with the soil or a certain...
Sure.
You know,
who knows?
We'll have to have Chris back on again from Balsam Lake Prolon and actually do our turf talk, which is what we were going to do, and then the timing changed, and we changed that all up. So anyway, I've had many questions this month, so I want to address those so that... our listeners get their questions answered.
And time doesn't take it away from us.
Well, it always does.
I know.
Every time it's like, do I have enough material? And then it's like, wait, running out. So, but I had to get while we were talking about your lawn, it reminded me of this query I've been having about the grass. So anyways, a couple ID questions from Dawn, which, you know, being on air, I can't show... folks, the pictures, but so she had sent me a couple different photographs, and then one of the plants is what is called false Solomon's seal, which is, and I see how I get the Latin here, but Myanthemum racemosum, and that is actually one of our native woodland plants, and it has an arching stem, and it looks like Solomon's seal, but it's flowers and fruits at the end of that arching stem, and you'll see them in the woods, and they kind of have like a laddery pattern to the leaf.
Okay.
And then the true Solomon's seal, which is the genus on that, is Polygonatum, has many different species, but that plant follows flowers along the stem and then underneath the leaves. So when you're out in the woods trying to identify, you would look for the flowers or the fruit, whether they're at the end of that arching stem or underneath along the stem.
Did this query come from a gal who found it in the woods, or did it suddenly show up at her place?
She has woods in her yard.
Okay.
And found it there. And, you know, and I have seen on the true Solomon seal, I've seen many different interesting species on that, where there's a variegated variety, which is quite interesting. There's a miniature one. I have that here. That's great. People were really getting into the fairy gardens for a while. And that mini Solomon seal is kind of a fun one. But with the Solomon seals, one thing with those, if you were to purchase them, which you can find them at some of the nurseries, they do spread. So they're okay. Spreaders. I mean, they're not invasive, but you want to make sure you give them a little bit of room. And like the one I have, that miniature one, it's just forming a nice clump. It's not popping up all over the garden. Or and then Dawn had another, she had sent me another weed question, and it was a plant called jump seed, which I had to look up. I wasn't familiar with that one. And it reminds me, and I'm still doing more research on this, because it reminded me of another weed that I'm familiar with that gets kind of like a little sticky seed on it. Hmm. With some of those, you want to get out of there because you wind up with them, the dog winds up with them. So I'm still doing more research between jump seed and then trying to find out what the, identify this other plant that I'm familiar with but don't know exactly what it is. So, and then a lot of weed questions. This must be the time of year everyone's weeds are out of control. So there's another weed called quick weed or hairy galansoga. It's galansoga ciliata.
What? Oh,
and that one gets its name. It has hairy leaves and stem, and it's a seed-producing annual. It shows up a lot in people's vegetable gardens.
Oh.
And it's kind of cute, though. It's got, like, little, it's in the daisy family. So the flowers are really small. And then the outer edge of the flower has, the little ray petals are like, it's described as three-toothed. There's three little notches on these little white petals, and then the center has little tiny yellow flowers, discs in the center. And one thing with some of these weeds, though, I have to say, they're like, that one is easy to pull out. It'll have a big kind of branching structure, and they can actually get quite tall, but you can pull it, and the root comes out.
The root comes out easily. Boy, that's good.
So it's nice, but it's one you want to get out of there just because it gets big and it competes with what you're trying to grow.
Well, from what you described, that sounds like something you might leave because, oh, gee, that's kind of pretty.
Well, that's the mistake. I've done that with certain things before. Oh, that looks kind of nice. And then you get this thing that seeds out everywhere, and now you've got it everywhere. You know, something will show up sometimes if you get, you know, it'll show up in the mulch, or if you get soil from somewhere, you get these weed seeds in there, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Oh, gosh.
Not so cool after a while.
And not to get, I want to get back. I've got more questions. That one came from Eric. But while we're talking about weeds, and I know I've got this further ahead in my notes, it's kind of that time for the annual weeds. Get things pulled out or trimmed off before they seed out. Because right now a lot of these annual weeds are starting to get in their prime. You know, those weedy grasses are getting their flower on them and that seed head. And if you can, even if all you can do is get that seed off of there, because these annual seeds aren't going to come back, these annuals aren't going to come back from the root. They're going to set seed, and that's how they're going to come back next year. So if you can try to get those seeds out of there.
Is this about the time that plants set seeds like that?
Yeah, and it depends. I mean, some things bloom all summer, some things just bloom once. It's It's just the time we're really starting to see things. People are getting, you know, the plants are getting to that size, and they've matured, and they've gotten pollinated. And
okay.
And then one other question from Natalie. So her question is, I have some irises I want to relocate. Is it okay to move them now, or when is the best time?
Uh-huh.
Well, Natalie, I've got good news for you. This is the perfect time. So basically with the irises, the ideal time with them is pretty much any time after they're done blooming up until fall.
Oh.
So now is perfect. And when you lift those out of the ground, use a spade or a fork and try to get the whole mass out if you can.
Yeah.
And then if you're going to divide them, once you get it out, you kind of clean off that soil and then break those big tubers apart from each other.
Well, they're pretty hardy, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can abuse them a lot, and they still come back.
Well, and the thing with moving them now is you want to get them in so they do have time to set some new roots before the winter comes. I mean, either way, you're storing it underground. You're going to be pretty safe, even if you did it later in the season. But it's trying to get them in to get some roots set up. But, you know, I have to say, this break in the heat, it's been downright chilly a few times lately.
It has been, I tell you what. This is
but
an odd year.
Like that, for moving things, it's a lot less stress when it's nice and cool.
Yeah.
The plants, you know, have an easier time than when it's super hot. Although I would take a little bit of rain again here.
Yeah, it doesn't take long for things to dry out.
No.
Even though the rivers and so forth are still running pretty high.
Oh, we've been out. We've been out twice on the apple, two different stretches of the apple, and then up on the northern, closer up to Grantsburg and went on the St. Croix. And, the water's high.
Yep, it sure is. But the ground dries out in a hurry.
Yes. But we definitely have some water out there.
But we still need some intermittent showers.
Yes.
You know, they've been talking about that for a day or two, but I haven't seen any intermittent yet.
Well, that was over the weekend. It was supposed to be, you know, they were pretty set on Saturday and just a teaser.
That's all. Anyway.
So I got to see, and I don't know if people are familiar with this plant or not. It actually has a really wide range throughout the United States, but it's just not a very common plant, and it's called ghost pipe.
Oh.
Are you familiar with that? Ghost pipe or Indian pipe?
Oh, I've heard of that. Yep.
So it is the coolest plant because it does not have any chlorophyll.
Really?
So it's completely white. It's almost translucent. And I was fortunate enough to find two clumps of it the other day, and I was just amazed. And it was like growing under this oak tree in an existing garden. Well, I think it was planted probably like a year ago or something. It's relatively new. And then underneath this oak tree. And I found one clump of it first. And then when I came around, I saw another clump of it and was like, oh, but it's so neat. It doesn't get very big. It's maybe only, I don't know, 5-6 inches tall.
Oh.
And they can come, they're all on a single stem. They can grow, they do typically grow in little small clusters. And then there's just one flower per stem.
Oh.
And it's actually in the blueberry family.
Okay.
So if you're familiar, if you've ever seen blueberries have these little, you know, kind of a bell. But with this ghost pipe, it looks like, it comes up the stem, comes down, and then that flower hangs down at the top, which is where it gets its name, because it looks like a little pipe.
Yeah.
And if people want to look this up, the scientific name is Monotropa uniflora. And these Latin names have a reason. The uniflora means single flower.
Ah.
So that is where.
Okay.
So if you can get familiar with these Latin names, I could do a whole show on that. It's fun. I mean, alba means white. Rubra means red. You know, there's certain things that mean hairy or glaucous or, you know, there's words that help to describe the plant. So when you're trying to ID things, these names, they have meaning that relates to describing. Yeah.
I always thought that they always put the Latin terms in there just to confuse us.
No, it's plus there's so many plants that have the same common name.
Uh-huh.
So the Latin name gets you so you know exactly.
I see.
The exact plant. Although the taxonomists, they change names sometimes. Like I was, which we'll get to this topic eventually here, but I was researching some other plants. And I had to use a really old book that I had. Well, sometimes some of the Latin names will change or things get classified, groups get combined. So it's interesting, but it still narrows it way down from a common name that many, many things can have the same common name, but only one Latin name until it gets changed, and then you just have to try to keep up with.
Yeah.
Is it Simisifuga or Actaea? And you know, for a while you can use both. You know, daisies are one, Leucanthemum, Chrysanthemum, you know, things change. But anyway, we're getting off track. So ghost pipe. So it's got little small scale-like leaves and then these little white five-parted flowers that are kind of like a little bell at the end, and they grow in these little clusters. And there, some may have like pink, a little pink color, some black specks. The one I found, the group was totally white. So how that works is with the no chlorophyll. So instead of photosynthesizing, the ghost pipe actually gets its nutrients and its carbohydrates from the tree roots. So
really?
There's mycorrhizal fungus that are growing with these tree roots, and the energy, so the nearby tree, so that oak tree that this was growing under, is photosynthesizing. Then that tree is passing through the mycorrhizae that energy, and then it gets to the ghost pipe.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Is that cool or what?
That's pretty cool, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And to see this plant, and I've only seen them a few times. And I've worked outside a lot. I've spent time in the woods. I've camped my whole life. And I have not come across them very often. But, boy, when you do, it's a treat. And it almost looks more like it would be a fungus.
Oh.
Because it's white and, you know, it doesn't look like your typical plant. So, folks, if you can look these ghost pipes up and see some pictures, they're just really, really neat.
So are they spreaders, or they just grow in a spot?
They'll grow in a spot. Nope, sometimes they just come up as a single stem, but usually they're in small clusters.
So you didn't take a little sample that you could put in your garden, did you?
No, no.
You don't want that.
Well, no, and the whole thing is I don't know how that would work, because they're feeding off that mycorrhizae.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And I mean, and you can buy, mycorrhizae is very good for root development, and there's some, like a lot of the Dr. Earth products that I like to talk about have mycorrhizae in the soil, so you can create a living soil in your garden, because this is a big part of our soil depletion, is that we've killed everything. We don't have the beneficial insects and bacteria and fungus and all these great things that work together. I would be concerned with the ghost pipe that if you didn't have that connection with that tree that's doing the work, feeding the mycorrhizae and hence feeding this ghost pipe, I don't know how they would transplant.
Ah, okay.
So yes, people, please leave things alone.
yeah.
Or if you were going to experiment, you know, a person would need to look more into trying to gather seed or something, but I'm not sure how that would work. But that's a good question.
Now you have something else you have to research.
So you typically, if you find them, they're going to be in a mature, moist, you know, shaded forest. Although, like I said, I found this one, it was actually in a garden right near a lake. I mean, it's probably 10 feet off from the lake, but maybe that's part of the moisture, and then underneath that oak tree.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was in a yard. It wasn't, although the yard is surrounded by woods. you know, if people hadn't built a house there, I'm sure there'd be woods there.
Yeah. Wow. Man, that's a, so it feeds off the oak tree.
Well, it's feeding, it's, yes, but with the mycorrhizae, though.
Gotcha.
So the roots from the, it's taking that, the nutrients, from the mycorrhizae, from the roots of the tree, but through the mycorrhizae.
Okay.
It's really interesting. It was really fun to look up and learn more about because.
And now you know where it is. You can go visit it once in a while.
Yeah, I know. I let the homeowners know that I had found this and that they should really go look at it and to leave it alone.
Yeah. Don't take it away.
No. So let's see, where should we go next? You know, we had Janie, the butterfly lady, on last year, and she talked to us all about saving the monarchs and
oh, yeah.
So we actually, Anthony did find a larva one day, and I was kind of reluctant at first. Like, I just kind of didn't want to deal with it, you know, but, oh, he wouldn't listen. So he goes and gets the container and grabs, and, you know, and he knows what to do. So he's collecting the milkweed, he's getting everything ready for the little guy, and I found a net thing to put over the cover. So, you know, and the main thing is they just really poop a lot. But it's really easy. So every day, and Janie calls it frack. So just every morning you get up, you know, get him out safely on a leaf or something, dump the rest out, everything tumbles out, you put new leaves in there, you put them back. But we had, it was really interesting, so when our little guy created his chrysalis, it was kind of alarming because it looked still at the top like part of him was hanging out, like it looked like you could, I should have taken a photo. It was like you could see his face or his eyes, kind of. Oh, and then with, like, leg, it almost looked like a dragon, how a dragon flies. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It was really strange. And I thought, oh, God, something went wrong here. But I left it be. Well, then he came unattached from where the little silk is that they attach to hang and fell down in the bottom of the container. And I was like, oh, goodness. But I left it be. Thought, well, let's, because the color was still good. You know, they get that gorgeous jade. Mm-hmm. Green color, and the color still was fine.
Oh.
So I just left him, and then like a few nights ago, I looked in, and you can see, eventually you see the orange and black wing through, but first I just saw the black, and I thought, oh, nope, and I thought, oh, no, that's the wing pattern. Next morning, we had a butterfly. And
how about that?
He was just fine, so I don't know, and I tried to look up information on it. I really couldn't find anything. I actually tried to get a hold of Janie one day and wasn't able to get a hold of her. But I thought, well, we'll let it go. And then the same morning we released him, we found another larva outside.
Oh, no kidding. So you start all over again.
Yes.
Oh, well, that's kind of a
good
thing.
On the note of the monarchs, and I've said this before, but in case people missed it, this is the time of year you start to see on the milkweed these, like, orange aphids. They're fine. Just leave them alone. If they're really bugging you, pick them off or rinse them off. They're not going to hurt the plant. They're fine. Please do not put insecticides on your milkweed where the eggs are being laid. Because I have not seen a ton of butterflies this year.
No, I noticed that too.
So I went and walked the prairie, and that there was quite a few there.
Yeah.
But really, at home here, not seen a ton. I've been seeing some fritillary butterflies on the purple coneflower, so that's been fun. So there's a little bit of diversity. But, yes, please leave the aphids be and don't spray insecticides on them.
So on the subject of the monarch, is the situation as serious as it was a year or so ago when they were begging people to grow milkweed?
You know, I don't know. Okay. I have not looked into that.
Well, I have seen some monarchs this year. I thought more than we usually see.
Oh, good.
You know, but who knows? I don't get out like everybody else does.
Well, boy, I guess I overprepared. I'll have topics for next. Well, we have a few. We have a little bit of time left. So, looking into, I was talking about the naming of things and the taxonomy.
Oh.
So, beginning of this month, we started really picking berries like crazy. And it got me wondering, what's the difference between a black cap and a black raspberry and a blackberry? And it was kind of hard. Even my woody plant manual, which I have great respect, Michael Durr is the author. If you really want a good book for IDing woody material, he is the guy.
Okay.
Not a single raspberry in the book. He does currants, gooseberries, blueberries, everything, and nothing on the raspberries. So I thought, okay. So then I went to a book I had. It's older, I think maybe from the 40s or something.
Oh, yeah.
And that one was pretty good. And then I got a lot of names, and, you know, you kind of got to break it down because it's for the whole United States. And But then it talks about, you know, west to the Mississippi or east to the, you know.
Yep.
So you got to think, okay, so what would be in our region? Me personally, I think a black cap and a black raspberry are not the same.
Oh.
Although some people think a black cap and a black raspberry are. I feel like the black cap has a tighter fruit, and the black raspberry is a little more like a traditional plumper red raspberry. Looking them up, the black cap was Rubus leucodermis, which leucodermis, hey, we've talked about this before, means white bark.
Yeah.
So that's an identifying characteristic. For the black raspberry, it was Rubus occidentalis leucodermis.
Oh, wow.
So whether those two are the same or different is still yet to be determined. And then the black caps and the black raspberry, they have a hollow core. So when you pull them off, it's inside the fruit is hollow.
Okay.
And then they are sweet, and they have white hairs on them, and then that leucodermis, that white bark.
Yeah.
Whereas a blackberry, which near as I can tell, we've got Rubus fruticosis from what I could find, although that resource said it was zone 5, and they're clearly growing here because we just picked some yesterday. But the blackberries have a white or green core. So when you pick the fruit, there's something inside of it. It doesn't have that hollow core. They're a little plumper, and they're a little more smooth and glossy and tart. You know, they're not hairy like the raspberries.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was able to get some information, but it wasn't that easy. And I thought, well, very interesting.
Well, there's a project for Sandra the Plant Lady.
Yes,
she can research it and write a book.
I can, yes. Oh, my word. I'll just eat them, I think.
I think that's a good idea. You know what? And all of that conversation kind of, I remember when I was a kid, one of the things that I hated to do, and my mother was great for it, take the kids and go berry picking, you know.
Oh, boy.
And I remember going berry picking for what she called black caps and black raspberries. They were the same to her. Now, she didn't get down to examining for hairs and all that. It was just a term they used for the berry we picked. I don't think she really knew what it was. It was just good to eat.
Well, and I'm thinking, I think that is, I think the black cap and the black raspberry, I think they are the same.
Okay.
Like, both of those have the hollow core, the white hairs.
Yep.
Maybe there's that slight difference, though. You know, and with things, there's different variations.
Yeah.
So I always think of the black cap as a little bit smaller and the black raspberry a little bit larger. And then, of course, the blackberry, which is a separate
all
thing,
by itself. Well, one way or the other, no matter how you define it or what they're called, they taste good.
Yes.
We're out of time.
Oh, come on, don't I have a minute?
Oh, sure, take a minute.
You know, I want to remind people to get out. Now is the time of the year. First of all, last chance to fertilize, so if you want to do any fertilizing, now is the time.
Okay.
And then get out and get some cleaning up done. Get some deadheading done, because a lot of the plants, you know, we've got several nice months here to go still. So plants to deadhead for rebloom are dianthus, or the pink's baby's breath, bee balm, blanket flower, which is also known as Gallardia, the deer delphiniums, false sunflower, foxglove, phlox, the geums, your daisies, coneflowers, your spiderwort, coreopsis, the catmint, yarrow, your salvia, your speedwell. Get out there and clean those up and get some deadheading in, because then they're going to have a nice chance to get some rebloom, and you can keep those flowers going nice, you know, well into the fall that way.
All right. Very good. Anything else you want to cover?
Of course. Reminding people, too, that East Emmanuel has that great labyrinth. So if you want to get out and get some time outside and relax and be in a nice garden, that East Emmanuel, just between Amory and Deer Park, just west of 46.
Yeah.
And they've just, their labyrinth there, we went and walked it yesterday, and it was just very relaxing, very peaceful.
Yeah.
Nobody else was around but us. And
and just, that's what way it has to be today.
Yes, yes.
And it's nice. It's nice just to get outside.
It is. And it was a beautiful space. So reminding people, you know, we had Camille Kalka on, and she talked a lot about the labyrinth. And it's just, it's very interesting. It's so, there's a set pattern there, but you can't really see it when you're doing it. And it just really reminds me of life, because when you look back on things, you see how everything's connected. But sometimes when you're in the middle of it,
you don't see it.
You don't. Yeah. And if you walk it with a few of your with your people, it's interesting, too, because sometimes you're heading in the same direction, and sometimes you're in the opposite, and sometimes you're next to each other, and sometimes you're not. And it just, to me, it just...
A neat place.
It's a neat place and a neat experience. So, yeah, reminding people that that is there for us to, for our community to get out and enjoy.
Absolutely. Sandra, take care of yourself. Be well.
You as well, and I will see you in September.
All right. Who knows what we'll talk about then?
I know.
Thanks, Sandra.
You're welcome, Bob. Thank you.
Sandra the Plant Lady on the Plant Rant from WPCA. It's 9:32.